SBS Audio is supported by advertising.
SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.
You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
It's your daily 10-minute business and finance news wrap for this Friday, the 17th of May, 2024. The Australian share market fell today 0.9%. We'll have the details with Marcus Bogdan from Blackmore Capital. But first to new home sales, which rose 22% in April, but it's a bit of an anomaly. So for more, including a look at the housing policies of both sides of government, I spoke with Tom Devitt, a senior economist at the Housing Industry Australia. Tom, new home sales jumped 22% in April, but it's likely to be a bit of an anomaly, right? Run us through why.
That's right. There was quite a significant spike in new home sales in April in both Victoria and Queensland. But the reason for this is likely to be because there was some recent changes to the National Construction Code that come into effect from the 1st of May in both of those states. And those changes are going to increase the costs of construction for home builders in both of those states. So a lot of home buyers were trying to get ahead of that deadline so that they could get ahead of those cost increases. We saw a similar thing happen in New South Wales last September when they brought in their new energy efficiency changes, led to the same kind of spike in September and then a shadow of sales in October and November. And we're unfortunately expecting to see something similar in Victoria and Queensland in the next couple of months.
I guess a couple of questions. Why are these new rules coming, especially at a time when we're seeing a housing shortage? Because what does it mean for the government's target of reaching 1.2 million dwellings over the next 5 years?
It has been pretty confusing at this point in time when construction costs have been increasing so much over the last few years. During the pandemic, materials prices went up by around a third. Labour costs are still going up and they're being compounded by these changes to the construction code. There are reasons why or why not these changes might want to be made to improve energy efficiency and to improve the quality of housing design over time. But the timing of these changes is really compounding a lot of challenges that the industry has been facing over the last couple of years. And the effect that it's going to have is simply to have those costs passed on to the end home buyer or result in those houses not being built at all. And that doesn't bode well for the government's target to see 1.2 million new homes built over the next 5 years.
We did have the federal budget out this week. Is enough being done by the federal government to fix the housing shortfall?
In short, no, not enough is being done. There was a lot of good stuff in the budget, and it's important that we acknowledge that. There's good ongoing support being provided for apprentices and for businesses taking on apprentices because they're key to ensuring that the construction workforce is large enough to actually build these houses. And there's good efforts and funding for infrastructure and encouraging state and local governments to release enough land and change their planning frameworks to allow the kind of housing volumes to be built that we need. Whether state and local governments actually get on board with those incentives or whether some sticks are needed in addition to the carrots to get them on board, that remains to be seen because there's a number of levers in control of the states, like stamp duty reform, like planning and land release, and in the control of the financial regulators as well to encourage lending and make it easier for people to obtain a mortgage in the first place. There's a lot of other levers that need to be pulled outside of the federal budget. So it remains to be seen how effective this is going to be.
And can we talk about the flip side? Because we also heard from the Coalition last night and its response, namely to cut immigration, stop foreign buyers for a few years and to allow access to super to purchase a first home. What do you make of all of that?
Well, the trouble with immigration is that recently it's been so volatile, and that's what makes it so hard for the housing industry to know how many houses need to be built and then actually build them. We went from around 200,000 net overseas arrivals before the pandemic to virtually zero for a couple of years, and now we're up at record highs. And that instability is really the big obstacle when it comes to immigration. In terms of super, HIA does support people being able to access their super in order to enter the housing market. Research has shown that a person's financial situation in retirement is very much dependent on whether or not they own their own home. So this is a good step in the right direction in that regard. Foreign buyers are not the cause of the current affordability and availability crisis in the housing industry. Actually, they're a main part of the solution, because foreign buyers are already largely restricted to just investing in new housing. With very rare exceptions, they can't invest in existing housing. As a proportion of total housing transactions per year, it's virtually zero. So the key is that we actually want to encourage foreign buyers more to invest in new supply. And one of the things that state governments have been doing over the last few years is everything in their power to scare them away with punitive rates of stamp duty and land tax. And the result, predictably, has been that investment in new supply, especially higher density apartment supply that foreign investors are more interested in, that has dried up incredibly over the last decade or so.
So as Sarah Hunter, the chief economist or an economist at the Reserve Bank, said earlier this week, there's no real quick fix to the housing problem.
Unfortunately not, no. Even if the very long laundry list of policy reforms that we want to see are put in place, it takes time for that to filter through to actual on-the-ground activity. The sales that we are seeing right now will take a few months to actually obtain approvals and finance and then commence construction. And it could be a year or more before that project is actually completed. And when it comes to higher density development, apartments and units, that can take 3 years to get an entire apartment development done. So unfortunately, in the short term, in the next few years, the affordability crisis around Australia isn't looking like it's going to be getting any better. It just really reinforces the need for these policy reforms to be made now, so that the government can actually reach that target and make a dent in the affordability crisis, because the targets they've set are not unachievable. They just really need to hit the ground running.
Tom Devitt there from the HIA.
Need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Why do people want to be at work? To feel heard, appreciated, part of something, and to know there's a career path for everyone. Inclusive workplaces are linked to increased innovation, productivity, and employee satisfaction. Make your organisation a place where people want to be. For inclusion and diversity training, visit inclusion-program.com.au.
Now, Market Day on the SBS On The Money podcast.
The Australian share market fell today. The S&P ASX 200 down 0.9%, 7,814. For more, I spoke with Marcus Bogdan, the Chief Investment Officer at Blackmore Capital. Marcus, a quieter day on the share market today following a big week, but can we start with what's happening in the US? Because overnight, the Dow Jones Industrial Average breached 40,000 points for the first time, closed just below that though. How much of it has to do with the direction of US interest rates?
Well, the US market is in an ebullient mood because earlier this week, the US inflation report showed a small fall, and that's the best reading that they've had for several months. And that allowed for the expectations to rise in terms of the ability for the Federal Reserve to cut interest rates later this year.
The market's been surging for quite some time in the US, particularly since the trough during the pandemic. Surely companies, though, at the same time are going to have to show that their earnings are pretty resilient, though, going forward. And we get the likes of Nvidia reporting next week.
You're absolutely right. The direction of share markets is ultimately driven by the direction of earnings. And earnings in the US have been better than expected in the first quarter. And most notably, it's been those magnificent seven stocks that have demonstrated both higher than expected revenue and earnings. And that's underpinned the higher share prices that we're seeing.
Okay, let's focus on Australia. We had the federal budget earlier this week, rebates, some potential inflationary stimulus, but at the same time, economic data showing that unemployment is rising. What's the market now thinking about the direction of Australian interest rates? Because we've been seeing those expectations wildly swing as well.
Well, there's a very interesting contrast of Treasury's forecasts and the RBA's forecasts just this week. Treasury are more cautious around stickier inflation and the expectation that interest rates may have to stay higher for longer. The budget numbers were slightly more optimistic, but the expectation is that the federal budget was expansionary. And it suggests that inflation could remain stickier for longer.
Can we focus a bit on China today too? Data out today showed that consumer spending has unexpectedly slowed. Industrial production accelerated, but house prices are also down in the month. What's your take on the economy and implications for Australia?
Well, there certainly seems to be a bifurcation in the Chinese economy. And you're absolutely right. The property market remains weak. That's affecting the domestic consumer in China. But what we have seen at the same time is that both industrial, manufacturing and Chinese exports have been stronger than anticipated. So it's a manufacturing industrial led recovery with the consumer lagging in China. That is ultimately good news for Australian resource companies because those resources are required to fuel that industrial and manufacturing capacity.
Finally, where do you see the opportunities for investors?
Well, the Australian share market is trading on a forward price earnings ratio of around 16.5 times, which is about a 12% premium to its long-term average. So the market is not cheap. And then if we look at the banking sector, that's trading on an elevated price earnings multiple of around 15 times compared to history of around 11 and 12. And then there is a slight premium on industrial shares trading at around 20 times. The exception is the resources sector, which is trading below its long-term average of around 10 times. And if we see a further recovery in China's demand, particularly on the infrastructure side and on the industrial side, I think that that's where the best opportunities lay for the moment.
That's Marcus Bogdan there from Blackmore Capital.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.